Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. My name is Herms, joined as always by my good friend Tyler O, and week two of the 2025 NFL season gave us plenty to talk about. We've got all sorts of fun developments in terms of, you know, how certain backfields are seeing their touches distributed, certain players continuing to struggle, and unfortunately, we saw some injuries in week two. Normally, we would start by going over what happened on the Thursday night game, but there is a more pressing matter that we need to start with, and that comes to us from the Cincinnati Bengals narrowly beating out the Jacksonville Jaguars 31-27 on Sunday, but largely that came with Jake Browning in at quarterback. Cincinnati fans, I'm very sorry that this is happening to you again. It's very unfortunate, but Joe Burrow dealing with some turf toe issues. It, I guess, is like so bad that there's some ligament damage involved and all sorts of things are going to have to happen surgery-wise. Point being, he's missing 3 months. We're probably not going to see him again this regular season unless Jake Browning is able to carry the Cincinnati Bengals to a winning record. At that point, we're talking maybe mid-December. Perhaps Joe Burrow comes back at that point. But for all intents and purposes, especially for us, you know, fantasy heads out here, it's over for Joe Burrow. Like, that's it. We don't have him. Obviously, there's huge ripple effects. Tyler, let's just start there. How are we feeling about this Bengals team now that Joe Burrow is going to be out of the picture basically for the entirety of the fantasy year?
It's not great, man. It absolutely sucks. Now, I will say Mr. Backup came in, Jake Browning, looked serviceable. Didn't look bad. We know, we've seen him, you know, unfortunately, Burrow has had his fair share of injuries in his career, and I believe that Browning has been his backup for a while now. So we have seen him play. And he's not bad, but we never want to see a backup in, right? That's not why we drafted all of the Bengals pieces as high as we did. So there's obviously some cause for concern here. Now, I ultimately think Ja'Marr Chase is fine. Do I think he's going to have that wide receiver one overall upside? No, but certainly have no problem penciling him in from a volume standpoint as a top 12 wide receiver every single week. I think I have more concerns with T. Higgins, as I absolutely believe that Burrow can support two top 24 wide receivers. Really unsure that Browning can do that. So T. Higgins, while he probably won't be on my benches, there is a lot of concern there. And then the overall offense is going to hurt, which is going to hurt Chase Brown a bit. We did see the snaps dip a bit as we've kind of worked through the season here. While there hasn't been, you know, a ton of sample size here from the Bengals standpoint, in week one, we saw a dip in the snaps as well. And then looking on to week two with Chase Brown, and things continue to dip a little bit. Now, not enough to where we're concerned, right? But we were seeing like a 90-ish percent snap share for Chase Brown last year. It's dropped to 70%. Still very much a bell cow role, but he is losing out on a little bit of work, especially some passing work from Pirine. So losing 20% of the snaps as a running back and then having a downgrade at the quarterback position does kind of position Chase Brown to me as more of a high-end running back two than a locked and loaded RB1. So I don't have any interest in any other Bengals outside of that anyway, so I don't really want to talk about it. But I think my concern more so lies with T. Higgins and Chase Brown, and I think there's enough volume for Ja'Marr Chase not to be a bust going forward. But overall, not a great situation, man. I think best-case scenario, we're looking at Burrow week 15, and that's only if it's worth coming back, right? And when you have a backup quarterback playing all season with one of the league's worst defenses, begs the question if they're even going to have a shot.
It's going to be very difficult. It's going to be a massive uphill battle, but I think, you know, kind of the thing that you just touched on there at the end there is, I think the reason that I feel reasonably okay about it is because they are going to have to throw the ball no matter what. No matter who's in at quarterback, they're going to be playing from behind a ton because that defense does kind of stink. We do have that going for us in terms of what we can expect volume-wise from Jake Browning, but as an individual asset, I'm not entirely sure how interested we should even be in him specifically outside of maybe super flex leagues. But hey, if you're somebody out there who is the Joe Burrow manager in your league and you're looking for a replacement quarterback, I don't think you necessarily have to go with Browning specifically to be that answer for you. And I think that definitely, that about covers it for the Bengals side of things. But on Jacksonville's side, man, Basil Tootin, it's happening. We're doing the thing. He got out there. He found the end zone. This is so wonderful. Goodbye, Tank Bigsby. We didn't need you. Have fun in Philadelphia, because we have ourselves Bashal tootin'. Okay, obviously, I could be as excited about this as I want to be. I could probably hype him to the moon, but, you know, you're probably going to be able to balance out my enthusiasm a little bit more. Let's get a nice measured sort of perspective from you, Tyler, and how you're feeling about this Jaguars backfield now that we might have a role for Bashal tootin'.
Yeah. So, I mean, you were right. I think you said it, Herms, or at least you've been talking about it for a while, is that Tootin needs to be on our rosters. No sense in him being on any waiver wires anywhere. I think you said it before the season started, and then you certainly said it after the Tank Bigsby trade. Now, Etienne still saw 66% of the snaps. You know, I don't know if that's bell cow status, but that's very much lead back status.
Yeah.
Tootin is at 25% snap share, and for some reason, LaQuint Allen is still hanging out with like a 15% share. Don't love that for, you know, I'd love to see, the reason I say that is I would love to see Bashal tootin' in at least the 30 to 35, maybe 40% snap share. He did do a lot with a little. I mean, he got a touchdown, went 2 for 2 and 32 through the air, was able to go 8 for 42 on the ground. Like, he looked good, right? We knew Tootin was going to look good, and he did look good. Now he has that opportunity in front of him. I do still believe that Etienne is going to lead this backfield, and Etienne has done nothing in these 2 weeks to make us think that he can't be the lead dog. I mean, Etienne had a great week one. He went 14 for 71 rushing. Etienne also went 2 for 18 and a touchdown through the air. So for me, it is a bit of a share with leaning towards Etienne leading it, but absolutely, we are rostering Tootin. I don't know if I'm comfortable starting Tootin in week 3. Just yet. Let's see if he can like get some more work. It could easily happen. There could be a trend in the direction as we get going through the year, as we do see with most rookies, is they get more work as the year goes on. I do not know if that happens in week 3 for Tootin, but man, if he's on waivers, he's got to be one of the top running back ads, no doubt.
All you listeners out there, go ahead and check, because in 40% of ESPN leagues, he is rostered, and only 55% of Yahoo leagues. Definitely more of an available piece on ESPN than in Yahoo, but that's still a rather substantial amount of places where he's still a free agent. So make sure you remedy that, get that taken care of 1000%.
I got one more thing I'd like to add before we close this out. You know, Brian Thomas has been a bit of a disappointment here. I mean, 12 targets, only saw 4 for 49. I don't have the stats from week 1 in front of me, but it was similar where he saw a large target share and didn't have much to show for it. There has been some reports of him battling some kind of wrist injury. And if you watch the tape, it clearly looks like he was shying away from hits and balls were going through his hands. It's something I'm monitoring. Now, with the target share that he's been getting, it does say that he is an elite alpha in this offense. But then you look at the box score and it's very much disappointing. So for me, I'm not panicking on Brian Thomas yet. I think there are some folks that took him at the end of the first that are probably like, what the heck? This is not what I signed up for. I've got myself barely even a flex play out of Brian Thomas. The volume is there. Let's give it some patience. I'm going to continue to roll him out. I understand the concern for it, but let's just see if this wrist works itself out. It's something to monitor for sure, but the panic meter is very low, in my opinion, for Brian Thomas Jr.
If there is a manager in your league that is the person holding the BTJ bag and they're not having a great time, if you can get some sort of a discount, maybe, you know, put out some feelers on that. But if you are that individual, absolutely, just relax. It's going to be fine. Things are kind of weird. And also, I want to remind people before we get into our next contest that this is only the second week of the regular season and the second week of regular season with Liam Cohen and this new offense. This is still something that everybody's trying to get a feel for in real time. I get that this is frustrating, especially even going back to last year where BTJ honestly did perform a little bit better with Mac Jones at quarterback than he did with Trevor Lawrence. There is like larger stuff at play that I guess could be somewhat concerning, but if we tilt too far after just 2 weeks, you're really not doing yourself any favors. Just try to stay the course, be patient, and things will probably work itself out eventually. Now that we've gotten that game out of the way, we can hop all the way back in time to Thursday Night Football, the big loss that the Commanders sustained to the Packers on the road. And it wasn't just the game that they lost. They lost some players from their lineup, and it's really unfortunate. We'll keep it sort of with the quarterback theme because there are a lot of injured quarterbacks. It's not just Joe Burrow. Evidently, Jaden Daniels is dealing with a bit of a knee issue considered day to day. Not like already ruled out for week three, but there is at least a decent chance that we could end up with backup Marcus Mariota in week three. Tyler, is that something that you're concerned about? Because, I mean, like I said, they're calling it day to day. I don't think this is one of those things where we're going to need to plan for Jaden Daniels being out for a long time, but like just vibe wise, like how are you kind of feeling about that?
No concerns with Jaden Daniels. When somebody says day-to-day for me, it's really tough for me to get upset about. I mean, almost every NFL player is going to be day-to-day as the season kind of works its way through here. So no concerns on the Jaden Daniels thing. Awful to hear about Austin Eckler. Obviously, this does open things up for our dear friend Bill Kroski Merritt, as he has one of the most wild rides this offseason than going into these 2 weeks. He salvages week one, does do well in week two, but it really does open things up for him. And I think the last thing I would say about the Commanders, man, is Debo seems for real. I was not in on the Debo thing. I did not consider the Debo thing. The pneumonia issue that he had last year must have been for real, and he's over it because the guy looks like he's back. You know, that was something I definitely got wrong this offseason. So hats off to those folks who stayed on the Debo train. And then I just want to say no concerns about Terry McLaurin. Check out how he started his season off last year. And look how he finished it. No concerns.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And, you know, also, like you were saying, unfortunately, Austin Eckler, torn Achilles. This might be the last time we see him play professional football. I bring it up just because. Now, this is not going to be that important for people in, like, 10 or 12 team leagues. But if you're playing in, like, a deeper format, and you just, like, really need somebody to throw out there. Jeremy McNichols, I think, in terms of, like, what this backfield is really going to need, from like a complimentary standpoint, working with Bill, McNichols makes a lot more sense than Chris Rodriguez. So if you're really kind of desperate and you're out there, again, really want to reiterate, like 14 teams, 16 team, like a deep league, you could consider taking a look at Jeremy McNichols. Just wanted to get that on record, you know, figured, hey, why not bring it up if we can. On the Green Bay side of things with the Packers, anything really stand out to you there other than, oh my Lord, Tucker Kraft, where has this been? Wow, what a breakout.
Yeah, it's for those folks who waited at tight end and got Tyler Warren or Tucker Kraft, it looks like they did the right thing at this point in time, right? I know Jaden Reed, it looks like he fractured his collarbone, I believe, his clavicle, that he's going to be out for a bit. Maybe that opens things up finally for Matthew Golden, who's been like an afterthought throughout this entire process. Obviously, Golden Wicks are going to be direct snap winners, but still, the only pass catcher that I have any faith in is going to be Tucker Kraft. And obviously, we do like Josh Jacobs, but not a lot of notes from the Green Bay side, except for the wide receiver room was a bit of a mess. Unfortunate that Jaden Reed is now going to be out for, I don't know, probably 6 to 8 weeks, I think. Maybe the wide receivers can kind of sort themselves out and Golden can get an opportunity, but definitely not starting any of those guys in week three.
Yeah, not really worried about picking up anybody off waivers either. I know a lot of people, you know, Dontavian Wicks, I think if you're, you know, kind of pushing it a little bit, you could probably look his way. He might be able to give you some stuff. But trust me, listeners, we have plenty more wide receiver targets to talk about on the waiver wire that participated in some other games. Wicks is not going to be even close to your top choice. Trust me. Now, getting into the rest of Sunday action, the Seattle Seahawks, get a load of that. All you people out there being like, oh, Kenneth Walker, the whole thing, what a bust, horrible pick, this is terrible, it's the Zach Charbonnet show. Well, guess what? That didn't really work out that way, folks. Ken Walker, over 100 yards rushing, found the end zone, even caught a pass. Mind you, Zach Charbonnet still out-touched him. He ended up getting 15 carries to Ken Walker's 14 overall touches, but it was 15 carries for 10 yards. It was not great. Not great, Bob. And against a Steelers run defense that has not looked very good through two games. So the fact that, you know, Charbonnet kind of flopping was a bit of a surprise. Ken Walker kind of bouncing back to earth was definitely nice to see. But okay, now that we've seen like the 2 week sample though, Tyler, are you feeling any sort of way about this backfield, or is this just one of those things where you're looking at it and it's like, well, that's kind of what I was expecting was going to happen, and week one was the fluke?
Yeah, I think you nailed it there, man. We've got a good sample size of Charbonnet and Walker both playing football together. And what we saw in week two is much more indicative of what we've been seeing in week one was indeed the fluke. Charbonnet, honestly, is tiers below Walker in terms of talent and skill as a running back. week one's not going to happen again. Well, I will say this is probably one of the first times we've seen Charbonnet like lead in snaps and lead in touches. It's just so crystal clear that Kenneth Walker is so much better of a running back, a much more better runner of the football. Not to mention, while there's not a lot to speak of in the pass game for these running backs, Walker does seem to be the guy who's getting some of the looks through the air. So I'm okay with Walker splitting the rushes with Charbonnet. He's a better rusher. He's more explosive. And then if he's going to get a little bit through the air as well, good for Walker. I do think we talked about Kenneth Walker being a top 12 option this offseason. Obviously, I think we might need to have to walk that back a bit, but certainly pretty confident walking or trotting Walker out here as an RB2, mid-range at least going forward. Obviously, some concerns with the volume, but the Seahawks offense is looking decent. Like, obviously, I think Darnold is operating it well. Had some concerns there. Darnold looks pretty damn good. His last team doesn't look very good without him. We can get to that later. But in the end of the day, man, I feel really good about Walker. And then just kind of close things out here. Like, it's really just, JSN. It was good to see Cooper Kupp get a little volume here. I don't think that's something that I'm going to be chasing whatsoever. But good to see Kupp kind of shake off some rust. And besides that, man, not really much to talk about, in my opinion.
And I think the same can sort of be said to a degree about the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, this offense is not great. Now, I know this was a special teams thing. This wasn't actually anything that happened on offense, but I think we all saw that situation where rookie Caleb Johnson's back there, doesn't really understand the whole thing about the rule where the kick is a live ball until, you know, this, that, or the other happens. And like that whole snafu is definitely only going to put him deeper into the doghouse that he's already found himself in. I can understand managers out there, if you drafted Caleb Johnson, you're probably not going to have much to do with him, at least for the next several weeks. This is going to be the Jaylen Warren show featuring an irritating amount of Kenny Gainwell. I don't really know that we feel great about putting Kenny Gainwell in lineups anyway. Don't really have anything else to add, you know, that we didn't say about this backfield last week. But you know, before we get out of this game and get into our next one, Tyler, in Dynasty, if you are the Caleb Johnson manager, I'm sure you are not having a great time.
Certainly
what
not.
Are you doing, if anything at all? Because I really don't think you can do anything, because selling him just feels pointless, right?
You're holding. You're not buying. You're just holding on and hoping for the best here. I mean, at the end of the day, there's not much of a rushing game to speak of still. And I think that's what I think Caleb Johnson is going for him, if he can figure things out, because the Steelers are not running the ball well. And that's usually not how the Steelers like to play football. I don't really think there's any players on the Steelers offense that I have any excitement about. Obviously, Warren had a big day on a 65-yard catch, but without that, you know, not so great. The only player that I think, you know, is flex-worthy for me, I mean, Jalen Warren, you can make the argument, yeah, you could use him as like a low-end RB2, sure. I'm not going to hate you for it. But I think just DK Metcalf for the ceiling, clearly there's a red zone role. He got the touchdown in this one. They're just spreading that ball out so much. I mean, one, two, three, four, six players got four targets in this game, Herms. They're just spreading this ball out absolutely everywhere. Not to mention, we also saw some targets to Roman Wilson, Connor Hayward. Even Darnell Washington got a target. I mean, they are spreading the hell out of this ball. I mean, that's what, six, seven, eight, nine players got a target from Aaron Rodgers and maybe Mason Rudolph. I think he came in there. So for me, I'm just staying far away from the Steelers in fantasy if I can right now. It's just not a very, I'd say, fruitful environment to figure out where the balls and where these points are going to be coming from.
It's going to be very frustrating, but talk about a couple teams that don't have that problem when it comes to their offenses. It's looking like, well, we'll start first with the Dallas Cowboys, because man, what a performance that was from that team. Dak Prescott out there, a classic performance from CeeDee Lamb, Jake Ferguson doing his thing, but I just want to give shout outs to Javonte Williams. I mean, I think on this podcast, I was pretty vocally pessimistic about him. I know I wasn't alone in that. I'm sure, you know, there were people out there who definitely weren't super stoked, but like, man, Javonte Williams, like, he's getting the workload.
Luckily, he's not bad. He's not bad.
Yeah. And considering where you drafted him, you got a hell of a bargain on it. So like, I think there's nothing really to take away from this other than just saying, Javonte, I'm sorry that I doubted you. What a performance from you. But the Giants side of the ball is, I think, where a lot of the big takeaways come from. I have one thing that I do want to quickly say. Wandale Robinson, folks, if you need a receiver out there on the waiver wire. Now, do I think he's going to have 142 receiving yards and a touchdown every week? No, I really don't think that's going to be the case. But 8 catches on 10 targets the week before, 6 catches on 8 targets. I mean, like, they're getting him the ball a lot. And this was something that I had said the past, you know, few weeks leading into the season, was like, if you needed a late round dart throw at wide receiver, Wandale Robinson's boring, but they're going to have to throw to somebody besides Malik Nabers, and he made the most sense. And look at us now. That's the world that we are living in.
Yeah, it's a crazy game because on one hand, Russell Wilson's not going to throw for 450 yards again in his career. This was a crazy anomaly, but it also speaks to the Cowboys and what we're going to be expecting all year from the Cowboys, in the sense that the Cowboys are going to be putting numbers like this every single week because they're going to have to play catch up because their defense is so bad. So I think that whenever we're looking at this is more indicative of the Cowboys, I think, than the Giants. Whenever the Cowboys are playing, they're going to be in high sky, flying high, high scoring affairs all season long. And you're going to want a piece of this. So that's one piece I want to talk about this. Anomaly, obviously, from the Giants side of things. Wandell's probably fine. Nabers is fine. The story really comes down to Cam Scatabo. You know, I definitely was on the Tracy side of things. Things are not trending in the right direction early, right? So I think for me, it's good to see Tracy still out there getting some work. He's still got 5 targets for 4 catches and 36 yards, but only 5 carries. Scatabo's 11 definitely has some concerns. I'm not jumping at the bit to add Scatabo to my team. I'm not going to be bidding a lot for him on waivers because it feels like it's going to be a little bit of a split. So I think this backfield is going to be a split, but I think there are some vibes here. We could see Scatabo taking over a little bit more while Tracy has a little bit more in the pass game. So definitely threw some cold water on the Tyrone Tracy hype, if there was any at all.
No, definitely so. And I think that there was reason for it, especially because, as we know, Cam Scatabo had missed a decent amount of camp in the month of August, especially with, I don't remember what the injury was, but he wasn't in practice. He wasn't getting a lot of those reps. But Brian Daboll did have a lot of quotes earlier on in the summer, really just talking about how much he liked the kid and like how, you know, he really has this, you know, good spirit about him, doing the whole thing, doing the right stuff. And I think we're just getting it a little bit ahead of schedule. I think that's really what is coming down to here. You know, we had to assume at some point Tyrone Tracy was going to have his luck diminish a little bit. And it sucks that it happened as soon as it did. But like you said, I don't think we need to panic and do anything too wild with it right now. We still have a lot of season left to play. And speaking of things that have a lot of time left, this podcast has a lot of time left. But before we get into the rest of it, we have to take our first commercial break, get the word from our sponsors, and we come back on the other side. We are going to rejoice that the Detroit Lions do not stink. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, y'all, what's good? It's your boy Herms from FTN's Crossing Routes podcast. I got something pretty cool I want to tell you about, so listen up. Our partners at DraftKings Pick 6 have a deal you don't want to miss. New DraftKings customers, this one's for you. When you play $5 or more on your first paid Pick 6 entry, you'll get $50 in bonus picks instantly. That's right. Play $5, get $50 in bonus picks to keep building your slips, take a shot at big payouts. All you gotta do? Just use promo code FTN to sign up and start playing. If you've been thinking about trying Pick 6, now's the time to get in. Use code FTN to sign up, and all new DraftKings customers can play $5 and get $50 in bonus picks instantly. Let's build some slips. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org in Connecticut. Must be 18 plus. Age and eligibility restrictions vary by jurisdiction. Pick 6 not available everywhere, including New York and Ontario. Void where prohibited. Pick6.draftkings.com/promos. 1 per new customer. Bonus awarded as non-withdrawable Pick 6 bonus picks that expire in 14 days. Ends October 3rd, 2025 at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos. Sponsored by DraftKings.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Crossing Routes podcast. We're crossing our notes for week 2 of the 2025 NFL season. It's still Herms. It's still Tyler O. The Detroit Lions are still good. They're still good. It doesn't matter that Ben Johnson's gone. They absolutely bounced back from what was a fairly sour week 1 performance, you know, at least relative to their standards, putting up 52 on the Chicago Bears and Mr. Ben Johnson himself. The Detroit Lions, that's your vibe, Tyler. I'm going to let you just take the baton and run with it. How are you feeling having watched that go down?
We needed it. We needed it. That's for sure. So I think it's going to be, I think we're seeing two ends of the spectrum here for the first 2 weeks for the Lions. I think the Lions, what did week two tell me? A, I'm almost certain the Packers defense is just elite. Like, I think the Packers got one of the best defenses in the NFL. And yeah, we saw that against the Commanders this past week, and then obviously against the Lions in week one. Bears have an awful defense, and we saw that in week two very clearly as the Lions hung 52 on them. I think the Lions offense is going to find itself somewhere in the middle where we're going to look back at the season and be like, wow, the Packers have a top three defense, and the Bears have probably a bottom five defense. And, like, I wouldn't be surprised if that holds true. But from the Lions side, I don't have any, like, crazy notes besides things are, like, everyone is what we thought they were. Like, good, good, good. I think the one thing that's kind of exciting is Isaac Tesla. I don't know how to say his last name. Tesla. Starting to take some snaps from Khalif Raymond in that wide receiver three role. Probably not fantasy relevant, but just kind of good to see. So, I mean, Jared Goff continues to be streamable, especially in, like, friendly environments, especially in the dome. But, I mean, everything looks exactly like it did last year from the Lions' perspective, man. No notes, just good to kind of see that the ball wasn't completely dropped and Ben Johnson wasn't the skeleton key to the success.
Now, on the other side, man, Rome Odunze, that was cool. That was a positive. We could definitely say that was a positive, but I really want to get your vibes on the whole Caleb Williams thing, because this performance wasn't particularly great. And like I said, obviously Odunze, you know, over 100 yards receiving, couple tutties, you know, 11 targets. That was awesome. But, you know, the rest of the pass catchers in this offense, I mean, DJ Moore kind of meh. You know, we weren't expecting a ton from the tight end room anyway, but, you know, Cole Kmet 2 for 29, and then just nothing for Colston Loveland. Nothing at all there. That's definitely something that people are probably starting to get a little bit annoyed about. What are your vibes with Chicago as a whole? Because, like, this team feels kind of gross.
Yeah, it's not good. The vibes are not good. I've never been a big Caleb Williams fan. I think I drafted him, like, one redraft league this year. Just never been a big believer in the guy. And I think so far I've been right. I think he's fine. Clearly has some things to work on. Ben Johnson seems to be working on him. But, man, it's just unexciting right now. I don't think there's much. Like, Rome Odunze is obviously, like, the piece where I'm like, okay, maybe he's completely taken over the alpha role from DJ Moore. That's definitely the direction it's trending in. Not ready to cement that yet. But besides that, I mean, Odunze, DJ Moore are probably the only startable pieces that are catching the ball. Then, obviously, Swift is going to be getting enough. But Kyle Mung, I mean, seven carries to Swift's 12, and then also seeing that you know, that split is a little concerning for Swift. Probably still fine as a kind of low end RB2. But yeah, besides that, man, I mean, Burden and Loveland are, I don't even think they're upside stashes at this point, man, considering I don't think this offense is going to be that elite. So I'm okay cutting bait on Burden and Loveland if for some reason you're holding on to them. But I mean, this is just the Rome Odunze and DJ Moore show. This offense isn't good enough to support anything else. We can move along.
Absolutely. And hey, if you're going to drop either of those players and you want to go pick up somebody who can help your team, I have a great name for you. And it's somebody that we talked about last week. And I hope that y'all went out there and picked up Tennessee Titans rookie Elik Eilmanner, because, man, he did the thing. 6 targets, but it finally turned into something a little bit more. 4 catches, 56 yards, and a pretty sweet touchdown from Cam Ward. It's not the best offense. I don't think any of us have particularly high expectations for this offense. You know, it kind of is what it is. Tony Pollard is who he is. But Elik Eilmanner, how seriously are we taking this? And is he somebody that has to be on every single roster? Because I can tell you right now, before I hand it over to you, 7.7% rostered on ESPN and 8% on Yahoo. Now, mind you, I checked this yesterday. Like, it might have changed a little bit. But still, we're talking below 10% rostership on each of those major platforms for Eilmanner. That just feels like a mistake.
Yeah, man, I've been on him all offseason. He's usually one of my favorite players. One of the kind of, like, not favorite players, but favorite kind of sleepers, true sleepers. I believe it's tough to be a sleeper these days. He, in my opinion, was one of my favorite true sleepers. I said it on this podcast in the offseason, where I don't believe that the Titans had a true X wide receiver, and that was going to be Eilmanner. I didn't expect him to turn on this early. But, I mean, he's been putting up a serious target share back-to-back games. He's looking like the starting next wide receiver. He brings something to that offense that I believe, you know, while Ridley's a fine wide receiver, there's just not anybody else on that roster that can really bring that skill set, man. So, you know, I think if you're, like, in a 10-man league, probably not. But I would say even, like, a 12-man league with regular benches, I would try to get him on there and stick him on and see what happens. He's been usable for 2 weeks straight. things are trending in that direction. Cam Ward is solid enough. So he's definitely an interesting piece where I think a lot of people are banking on Ridley being the only guy, and I don't think that's true from a pass-catching perspective. And the next thing is I mean, Pollard's going to break out here soon, and when things work himself out in a better matchup. He is getting a ridiculous amount of work right now. In fact, like, he is probably, like, the only running back on that team. I can't underestimate how much of a stranglehold that he has on this running back room, and that is just rare these days. It's really rare to have a running back like him who's going to be going out there getting a 90% snap share. I believe it was 89%. So Pollard is a buy low for me as some guy who's going to be a starter. Yes, we expect Spears back, but Spears wasn't really much of an issue last year either. So it's interesting to see how this team is going. There's not a lot of usable pieces, but definitely here for Team Aominor, and I love the workload I'm seeing out of Pollard.
We're definitely on the same page as far as that goes. I'll be interested to see if we're on the same page about the Los Angeles Rams, because I feel like we are. It's Kyren Williams, it's Puka Nacua, and it's Davante Adams, and we love all three of them, don't we?
We really do. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. We talked about this. I think the only thing of note here is we did see Corum a little bit more here. Kyren did have his snap scaled back, but still has a 70% snap share. Something to monitor if we do if we do see Kyren Williams' snap share drop a little bit and we do see a little more Corum. I do think it's going to be harder for Kyren to finish as a top 12 back, but the volume is still really good and certainly still usable on a week-to-week basis. But we do have to watch this going forward, as I do believe the Corum that we saw, that amount of Corum that we saw in week two, is enough to cap Kyren's ability to finish, say, in the top 10.
Anytime that we see, you know, any sort of shift, any sort of tide shift in a backfield, you have to pay attention to it. You have to be able to keep your eye on it, because anything can change at any given moments. And some things aren't exactly what we expected them to be. And I think, you know, a backfield situation that is very emblematic of that sentiment is the one in New England. Now, this New England Patriots backfield did give us a lot of fantasy points against the Miami Dolphins in what was a pretty awesome win for them. But it was Ramondre Stevenson leading the way. Dang it! I was promised that this was going to be the Travion Henderson backfield. Especially, you don't pick a guy that high in the NFL draft if you're just, you know, going to kind of keep him parked in the garage. But that does seem to be what they're doing. Travion Henderson, only 3 carries for 10 yards. He did see a couple catches in the game, 2 for 30 through the air. But, like, bro, what are we doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think after week one, Ramondre had a terrible game, right? And people were calling for more Henderson. Even I was calling for more Henderson. But I do believe Miami Dolphins are going to give a lot of players a get-right game this season. I think that's going to happen
a lot. Yeah.
So I'm not panicking as much as other people are on Henderson. Like, yeah, he's not usable right now. He needs to be sitting on your benches. I get it. But we need to be playing the patient game with Henderson. That's not probably why you drafted him in the 4th, 5th. Maybe you got lucky in the 6th round. I get it. It's a little bit of a disappointment, but I do think as there's much tougher matchups coming for the Patriots than the Swiss cheese that we see of the Miami Dolphins, that in the end of the day, stay patient, put them on your bench. I do think, like, eventually believe that the real Ramondre is going to come out as we get going here. And this isn't the Ramondre that we're going to expect on a week to week basis. If anything, sell high on Ramondre and buy low on Henderson. If I had to say anything about this, it will work itself out. It may take a couple weeks, but I do believe this will work itself out to where Henderson does lead his backfield in touches, as the Patriots realize when they're not playing a terrible defense that they're going to need a guy like Henderson touching the ball more. They just didn't need Henderson this game.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I think there's, yeah, definitely, like, if you're worried about it, you know, just take a breath, you know, kind of like with BTJ. Like, it's 2 games, man, and it's still, like, a new offense for everybody. There's still a lot, you know, at play here. You just have to be patient with it, just like we kind of have to be patient with any of these pass catchers. Did anything that happened through the air with New England matter to you at all?
No, man. I mean, I like Butte, and he started off with, like, a touchdown right away. I was like, let's go. Like, this is pretty sick. Love to see it. And then, like, what happened after that? Absolutely nothing. No one's breaking out at this point in time. I'm not dropping Butte just yet. But at the same time, 1 for 1 for 16, although it was a touchdown, it's just tough. There's no pass catcher here. I think between the running backs and then Drake May being a good runner himself, we kind of knew this going into the season that this like pass catcher room was going to be a mess and it might not give us anything. And so far, it's really not, man. So for me personally, no, I'm not. I'll hold on to Butte at this point in time. If you have Diggs on your bench, I get it. In PPR leagues, he's probably usable more weeks than not. But There's just a lot of mouths to feed in this one, man. I'm looking at this right now. 3-3. 9 players got a target in this game. 6 of them got at least 2. They're just spreading this ball around enough. And, you know, I don't see Drake May as a guy that's going to be throwing the ball 40 times a game. So right now, not a lot of interest in these pass catchers from the Patriots side of things.
Now, when it comes to the Miami Dolphins, obviously there's not really too much to speak of other than the fact that Devin Achane is probably just going to break PPR scoring because, dear God, the amount of catches that are coming in his direction, it almost doesn't even matter how bad the Dolphins are going to be. They looked a lot better in this game than they did against Week 1, to be fair. I don't want to pile on them and clown them too much, but like, regardless of what happens, if Devin Achane is going to be sniffing double-digit targets every single week, do you even care if this offense dramatically improves or not? Because, like, I'm going to feel comfortable with him top 5 every week.
Yeah, so for me, it's such a concentrated opportunity touch receiving tree that I'm not really worried about any of these guys going forward. I mean, Achane, obviously, but honestly, Tyreek, 6 for 109, Waddle, 5 for 68, and a tutty. You know, I think they're going to be... I mean, maybe this is how I feel. I think you can trust Waddle as a top 36 flex option, and you can trust Hill as a top 24 kind of wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3 option on the week-to-week basis. I definitely was calling that the Dolphins would have a usable kind of offensive fantasy week this week, and Vegas thought so as well, and it was true. There's just 3 players here, though. It's Achane that you want to play, and then I'm totally fine with Tyreek and Waddle going forward as kind of like, you know, kind of flex, you know, top 36, top 24 options. There's really no more notes here besides that, man. But the tree is very much consolidated. I mean, I think we have, 20? I'm looking at the math here. 23 of the 32 attempts went to Achane, to Hill, and to Waddle. And I expect that to be the norm almost every single week. So when they're getting those 3 players are getting that much volume, I think they're going to be usable. I talked about it all off season, how condensed this target tree is, and we're seeing it. And I think it's, you know, well, we're not going to be getting that top 10 upside we're used to seeing out of Tyreek Hill. He's going to be usable on a week-to-week basis. I'm not too concerned.
Yeah, you know, and hey, 3 people on one team, definitely not a ton in terms of, you know, number of usable pieces. But let's see if this next team has even fewer, because I'm not entirely sure there are even 3 people on the New Orleans Saints that we're trustworthy with. But one of them is definitely Alvin Kamara. He's just going to get his workload. He's going to do his thing. The other one, I'm feeling really good about Juwan Johnson. Folks, yep. If you still need a tight end, mind you, Juwan Johnson, he's very close to not qualifying for this, but 48.2% rostered in ESPN, 44% rostered in Yahoo. He once again saw a ton of looks, you know, very close to the team lead, just 1 shy of Chris Olave with 9 targets, 5 receptions, 49 receiving yards, and a touchdown. If you need a tight end, pick up Juwan Johnson. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, I mean, he's back. What's it, 96% snap share? He's about as full-time tight end as you could possibly get, and he puts it together for another really nice game. What a late-round dart throw that worked out if anyone took it. 5 for 49 and a tutty. What else can you really hope for out of this one? Obviously, you mentioned Kamara. And then I think Olave played 100% of the snaps, went 6 for 54. Again, usable in PPR leagues. Rattler, dare I say, looked okay in this one. You know, every week I'm ranked as like the worst quarterback in the league. I don't think he's the worst starter anymore. I don't think he's the worst starter in the NFL anymore. I'll say something nice about him. So not a ton here, nothing to get excited about, but I do like Olave, Johnson, Kamara going forward as startable fantasy options, and I don't think that's going to change at all.
You know, like you said, shout out Spencer Rattler. Definitely better than I thought he was going to be. Maybe not somebody that I'm looking for if I need quarterback help, especially if I have a quarterback who's hurt. But I will tell you, if Brock Purdy is out for another game, Mac Jones looked really good in command of this San Francisco offense, really got things cooking, especially, you know, really getting the ball a ton to Pearsall and Juwan Jennings. We can talk about those names for sure, but I just wanted to highlight Mac Jones as one of my favorite waiver wire targets this week because 1.4% rostered in ESPN, 3% on Yahoo. Again, obviously contingent on the health of Brock Purdy, but if we get another week of Mac Jones, he cooked, bro. And Kyle Shanahan, once upon a time, you know, when Mac Jones was coming into the league, there were all those whispers that, you know, that was the quarterback that he really wanted, the whole thing. I don't know. There's just a ton of really good vibes to it, and I like what we saw on Sunday.
Mac Jones looked composed, man. He kept the offense on schedule. We've seen other quarterbacks who didn't have success anywhere have success commanding the 49ers offense. Same with the running backs too. There's just something friendly about this offense if you get it. We'll see. If I'm with you on the Mac Jones thing. I mean, he looked good. I mean, I think people who had Brian Thomas Jr. last year wish they had Mac Jones back. he's done well for himself as a very high quality backup. If I want to, you know, obviously we had some injuries in this one. He's been out. Kittle has been out of this one. The thing that I do want to note is Juwan Jennings is the alpha wide receiver in this one. I'm sorry, Pearsall fans. I like Ricky Pearsall, but we're talking a 10-6 target difference. Jennings goes 5 for 89 in a TD, and Pearsall goes 4 for 56. As long as Juwan Jennings is healthy, he is the guy the wide receiver that you want to be trotting out. Not that you need to be benching Pearsall by any means, but Juwan Jennings is the wide receiver one in this offense right now, especially with Kittle out. No questions asked. And then what else? What is there to say about McCaffrey besides we know who he is? So they split, I will say, with Kittle out. We did see a split with Luke Farrell, and then, oh my gosh, I don't know this guy's name, Tongas. I don't know who he is.
I've never heard it said out loud either. So I actually
I don't know who he is. T O N G S. He's not. They're splitting time, so I'm not interested in the backup because there isn't a backup. So hey, man, Juwan Jennings is a smash start for me going forward here. While we're looking at these injuries, even with Mac Jones under center, because Mac Jones is putting this offense on his back, and I said maybe CMC is, but he's running this offense and looking good while doing it. Let's put it that way. That's what Mac Jones is doing.
1,000%, 1,000%. And hey, like I said, one more time. I'm just going to say it one more time. If you need a quarterback, think about Mac Jones. Especially, let's say you're in this situation. Let's say that you're the person who unfortunately started Justin Fields, ended up leaving with a concussion. There's no guarantee he's going to be out there fully for week 3. That's an entirely different conversation that we can maybe get to if we choose to, but that's just the way that I'm choosing to segue into this game. It was just ugly for the Jets all around. Even before Justin Fields ended up, you know, getting yeeted from the game for health reasons, they weren't getting anything going at all. To that end, is there really anything that you have to take away that is a substantive piece of information from this game? Because the way I'm looking at it is that it just stunk, and that is what it is. Like, these games are just going to happen. Sometimes teams fall flat and just, you know, kind of hope they do better next week.
Yeah. I guess I'll turn it to you, Herms. Was the one piece that stuck out to you more than anything else before I jump into mine?
I mean, the fact that Breece Hall is still getting the majority of the work in the backfield. I think if we are going to take away anything from this, is that, like, obviously everything else kind of stunk. Like, Garrett Wilson kind of saved you a little bit if you're playing in PPR scoring. I guess that's also kind of fine. But, like, yeah, the only really, really important thing for me is that it still, even at their worst, didn't pivot to some sort of weird committee. It was still very much concentrated on Breece Hall. So I guess that's probably my big dub.
Yeah. And I think Braylon Allen, honestly, is droppable. I don't think he's worth really hanging on to at this point in time. It's going to be Breece Hall. It's going to be G. Will. And that's really all we really got going for us here. I think he's a fine, like, handcuff, but I'm still really concerned if something happens to Breece Hall that we see Isaiah Davis out there splitting with Braylon Allen. I truly just don't think Braylon Allen holds much upside as kind of a handcuff. He was kind of a popular pick mid to late rounds. I totally understood that, but I've dropped Braylon Allen in a couple leagues as I just don't think there's much upside there to be had.
Weird team, weird game, and I think that also kind of applies to the flip side a little bit too. I'm not going to take too much away from what happened with the Bills in this one. I mean, when you're out there dominating that much early, you're probably going to shift things and do things a little bit more differently. I think that's why we saw between James Cook and Josh Allen and Ray Davis, like, over 30 some carries. They just pounded the rock. I think when we look at the box score and you see some of these totals from these receivers, like, obviously we were stoked about Keon Coleman after week one. He didn't really end up doing anything. Same with Josh Palmer, same with Khalil Shakir, whole thing. But, like, Tyler, you don't need to throw the ball a lot if you're absolutely dominating your opponent. So are you really worried about anything that the Bills showed us from this game at all?
Not so much. I mean, 43 rush attempts in this one is really the number that I want to get across to people. But I think a couple things that really stick out to me here. One, it's going to be Dawson Knox, 5 targets, 55% snap share. Dalton Kincaid, 48% snap share. Dalton Kincaid continues to be a part-time player. While it was good to see him get the most volume in this game, I truly don't believe Dalton Kincaid's going to be somebody that we can really rely on going forward. I mean, it was just interesting to see, like, even the wide receivers didn't get a ton of snaps in this one. I mean, Palmer was at 51%, Keon Coleman at 51%, Khalil Shakir at 49%. I mean, I think for the pass catchers, you can almost just throw this game out the door in terms of your evaluation. I don't think you really needed to put much weight into what happened here from the passing down when you have 43 attempts on the ground to 27 through the air. It's not going to tell you the true story of what's going to happen here. So I'll say, if anything, I'm not really buying into Dalton Kincaid, who had a decent game and then a really good game last week. I think he's a guy that's just a part-time tight end, and there's really nothing to write home about there. But I think, you know, as somebody who wasn't in on Keon Coleman, I definitely am not holding this game against him.
We have a few other games we have to get to, but, you know, we do have to take yet another commercial break. And when we come back, we will talk about probably two of my most exciting waiver ads for this week. Do not go anywhere. Welcome back to the Crossing Routes podcast. It's still Herms, it's still Tyler O, and we are still talking about things that happened in week two. And when it comes to the waiver wire coming up in week three, if you really need some help, especially with the whole tight end thing, I'm not sure why Harold Fannin Jr. is still as widely available as he is. Last I checked, 27.7% rostered on ESPN, 43% on Yahoo. He didn't have quite the same level of impact that he did in week one, but we're still talking about a guy who caught five passes for 48 yards. We love that out of a tight end. You got to make that right. If he's still out there, I don't really understand why that's the case. And there's a teammate of his that is also still not super broadly out there, but Quinshon Judkins, only 57.2% rostered on ESPN.
Go get him.
Yeah, dude, like, he walked in off the street. There's no way he knows the playbook at all, but he ended up leading the team in rushing, getting 10 carries, going for 61. Like, dude, why is Quinshon Judkins even still available in certain leagues? It makes no sense to me. I also have Cedric Tillman as a guy that I would like to target, but that's a whole other thing, and I've been talking too much. Why don't we turn it over to you? Anything from this Cleveland Browns game really encouraging for you whatsoever?
Yeah, I think the big thing is how much they're rolling out two tight ends. I mean, Joku at 82% snap rate and Fannin at 63% snap rate. They're really saying, hey, these are two of our best playmakers. We're going to make sure they're both on the field at the same time. I think a lot of folks are going to see that they're both playing tight end, and you're like, oh, something's going to have to give here. No, but the Browns are using both of them, right? They play almost different positions, even though they're the same position on paper. They're playing almost two completely different positions on the field, and I do think they're both usable. Yes, Joku has been a bit of a disappointment, but the tight end position, what he's been able to do over the last 2 weeks, has not been awful. So you're right. 100% agree on Fannin. I'm not panicked on Joku because of that. I want to start there. And I'm with you on Judkins. I mean, Judkins, they basically just told him where to run, and he goes 10 for 61.
Yeah.
I mean, three catches for 10 yards as well. I mean, dude, he's going to get more looks and more snaps next week. I mean, it shouldn't surprise anybody, obviously, considering where he was drafted, but he did that on a 27% snap rate, right? So even if that gets up into the 50s or 60s, we're looking at a locked and loaded RB2. And the only thing really holding him back is the fact that this offense isn't that great. So wheels up on Judkins. He has no business being available in anybody's leagues. He'd probably be a number one waiver wire target without question for me if he was out there for you, which I know he's probably not in your league, right? But for some reason, maybe he is definitely number one.
Now, keeping it in the backfield before we transition to talking anything else. Now, it wasn't a great showing for Dylan Sampson. Still found the end zone, but we're talking, you know, three targets, three catches for 13 yards and six rushing yards on four carries. It's a little disappointing, but I'm still taking it as somewhat of a dub that they still put him out there for pass catching. I still think there is a remote possibility that a lot of the things we said about Dylan Sampson last week might still be true, but maybe or at least my optimism personally is waning just like a little bit. Like, I feel like maybe like 15% worse about it. I'm not panicking, but I feel a little bit worse about it.
Yeah, I definitely feel worse. Probably like 30% here, probably double what you at. Because the issue is that Jerome Ford's still getting way too much work. Six carries for 31 yards to one carry, four carries for Sampson. And then also Ford is getting six targets to Sampson's three. We need to see that flip. We need to see Samson getting more work through the air before I start feeling better about this. A three-headed monster on the Browns is the last thing I want, and especially the second and third pieces. I mean, right now, Samson is sitting in the third part. It's like the third piece of a backfield on the Browns, and I do have some concern there. I will not be rolling Samson out going forward until we see him take more from Jerome Ford. Great stash, not dropping Samson whatsoever, but he needs to swap roles here with Jerome Ford and start getting more work through the air before I can trust him again. I rolled out Samson. I got lucky with that touchdown, saved my week. But overall, man, it's one of those situations where I'm kind of a little concerned, as a three-headed monster on the Browns is not necessarily something I want a piece of.
Yeah, it would definitely be irritating. We're going to have to see how that's going to evolve. But, you know, obviously, like we said before, Judkins we're feeling good about. It's really just everybody else that starts to get a little bit sus. Before we throw it over to the Baltimore Ravens, I did just want to give a shout out to Cedric Tillman. Like, yeah, two catches. Lucky that he, you know, caught one of them for a touchdown, but seven targets. That's back-to-back weeks in a row of him just getting a lot of looks. I'm not super stoked about throwing him in my lineup unless I absolutely have to, but like, hey, deeper leagues, if you need a flex, I think Cedric Tillman is a good name. He's probably like my third or fourth favorite receiver on the waiver wire. Everybody else we talked about earlier in the show, I'm more excited about. I would pick up those guys first. I'd go toward Wandale or Elik Iomanner before I'd look at Tillman, but hey, just something I wanted to throw out there. But for the Ravens, I don't know, like Lamar didn't really throw a ton, but he was still relatively efficient with it. Zay Flowers got a bunch of looks coming his way, and Mark Andrews is just evaporated. He's completely gone. Should we just drop him? Like, if Isaiah Likely's not even playing yet, and this is already happening to Mark Andrews. He's disappeared. He's caught two passes the whole year.
Dude, it's pretty brutal. I'm not dropping Andrews yet. I'll give him one more week, but man, it's pretty rough. It was a rough week for Derrick Henry too. I mean, if I were to tell you that, what was it, that they put up 41 points and Henry had 23 yards, you would call me absolutely crazy, but that'll work itself out, man. I mean, in the end of the day, a couple things I want to talk about. Zay Flowers is like the only pass catching piece I want a piece of. And it's going to be hard to believe because you're going to look at DeAndre Hopkins. You're like, dude, scoring. Like, yeah. We love this, and we're going to, but the thing is, his snap count is so low. What was the snap count again here? 18% snap count. That's not going to work. That's not going to work every single week. So I think don't be fooled by the box score with these players, because Walker was at a 23% snap short. This is just the circumstances of the game. They went to these guys. They scored touchdowns. Don't get it twisted. The only players you really want are Lamar Jackson, Zay Flowers, and Derrick Henry. There's really not much else out there. I mean, Tylan Wallace even scored a touchdown. So it's just one of those like kind of freaky games where these part-time or low-time wide receivers are catching touchdowns, but no real notes here. Just don't be fooled by the box score with the Ravens, because these are players that you cannot be counting on a week-to-week basis. There's no reason why you should be going to the waiver wire and adding Hopkins or Walker.
We get into another game that I think is pretty fun, mostly because this is my top waiver ad of the week, folks. This is the most important thing that you can possibly do for your team, especially if you are one of the people who needs a quarterback. Here's all you have to do. Go out on whatever host platform you're playing on, find Daniel Jones's name, submit a claim, and hope that you land him. That's it. There you go. That's it. That is the best thing that you can possibly do for your fantasy team, because, man, Daniel Jones, like, I mean, he's not lighting the world on fire through the air. That's never really been his bag, you know, to begin with. But, like, they're giving him rushing opportunities really close to the goal line, and he punched another one in this week. Like, playing with Shane Steichen, kind of working in an offense that is really tailored toward, like, the type of quarterback he is and how he likes to play stylistically. It's such a nice match, and I think we found ourselves a really, really nice feel-good story for this season early in Daniel Jones.
I mean, I really have nothing else to add to that. I think you absolutely nailed it, Herms. Absolutely agree with you. Good feel-good story. He's great for fantasy. A lot of quarterbacks we've been counting on have either disappointed or been hurt. If he's still there, is it too wild to say that you can count on Daniel Jones as your quarterback for the rest of the season? I don't think it is. I don't think it is.
I mean, there's a decent chance that I'm going to have to end up doing that, because, I mean, now, granted, this is the game that we're going to talk about at the end of the show, but, you know, I'm going to be without J.J. McCarthy probably for a few weeks here. I am personally going to need a very important quarterback piece, and the first name I'm looking toward is Daniel Jones. I really have no hesitation about it whatsoever. I think he's going to be cool. And I think this Colts offense is going to continue to be good, especially like, yo, shout out everybody who drafted Tyler Warren, by the way. That yes. just what a pro move that ended up being. Another 7 targets, you know, one shy of the team lead. What a performance from him. Also, Josh Downs, kind of want to give him a little bit of a shout out. Was really quiet in week one, but now we're kind of, you know, seeing a little bit more out of him. Any other takeaways from the Colts offense as a whole?
Yeah, it's one of those games when they're going to need to pass a lot, we're going to see more downs. We saw a 58% snap share. They're going to run Alec Pierce and Pittman primarily in their two wide receiver sets. But in games they need to pass, we're going to see a lot of downs. And when Downs is out there, he's going to garner more targets than Pittman and Pierce, in my opinion. If Pittman usually out targets Downs, it's because he's just simply out there running more routes and getting more snaps. They're going to probably bounce back and forth as the top wide receiver on a weekly basis. And then Jonathan Taylor, man, 93% of snaps. Dude's an absolute locked and loaded RB1, as we knew. So things are feeling really good there. I'm good to go on this one, on this side of the ball. A shift.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack with the Denver Broncos. I don't even have a way to like preface this conversation because there's just a lot of weird stuff that happened. Tyler, tell me your takeaways from this Denver team, because like, I mean, obviously, like they almost won. It wasn't bad necessarily, but like they are just distributing it so irritatingly, dude.
Yeah, so here's my take on this. And first of all, I don't think this defense is not looking as good as I thought it would be. I'll start there. But here's where I'm at. Bo Nix probably going to be a fine quarterback, you know, low-end quarterback one as we expected. Things are going to be fine there. This is J.K. Dobbins' backfield. Make no mistake about it. This feels eerily kind of like Ramondre Stevenson and Travion Henderson, except for I think that Travion Henderson is more talented than Harvey. And actually, I think J.K. Dobbins is probably more talented than Ramondre Stevenson. It's interesting in the fact that I would bet that Henderson has a better chance of overtaking Stevenson than Harvey does Dobbins, unless there's an injury that happens. Not dropping Harvey, obviously, for the upside, but I mean, make no mistake, this is 150% J.K. Dobbins backfield, and it's going to be that way, and you can roll him out as a you know, high-end running back two, mid-range running back two going forward. The wide receivers are rough, right? I tough game for Sutton, not panicking. I'll just put that to the side. Ingram is done. Ingram is a part-time tight end.
Oh, yeah.
It is over for him. They're not using him as a full-time tight end. He's at 43% snap share. Troutman's getting more snaps. If you're counting on Ingram in any way, shape, or form as your tight end this season, please start looking elsewhere. Hopefully you saw that signal in week one and went for the Juwan Johnsons or went for the Harold Fannins. And then from a wide receiver perspective outside of Sutton, I do think Franklin is a bit of a mirage. We've kind of seen this happen in the past where Sean Payton just decides like, oh, hey, you're going to be the wide receiver who gets the second most snaps or the most snaps next to Sutton. Like there's Sutton and then there's insert a wide receiver of the week. We've seen this with other wide receivers, Mims in the preseason when little Jordan Humphrey was there, when Vele was there.
Yeah,
some weeks there's just a wide receiver that gets the most snaps and benefits from that. I am not buying into or putting a lot of my shekels on Franklin to get him on my teams, because I think this could easily just shift. I think it was more matchup dependent. Don't look at me to explain that to you. I'm not really sure why that happened. But in the end of the day, I don't have that much interest in Troy Franklin. I do not see this as a breakout of his. If you want to add him for, you know, 2-4% of your fab to see what happens, sure. I have no problem with that, but I'm not unloading my fab thinking that Troy Franklin's going to be the next thing and he's going to be the wide receiver to own here that's going to be playing next to Sutton going forward. So definitely pumping the brakes there, as I do believe we're going to continue to see more Mims. We're going to continue to see more Pat Bryant.
Yeah, I think it's really easy for us to tell ourselves the really feel-good story of the fact that it's like, well, Troy Franklin was Bo Nix's guy at Oregon, and they have this rapport and the whatever and the blah, blah, blah. Don't get too caught up. It is kind of just weird how Sean Payton likes to do things sometimes. I'm definitely with you there. It's a little bit more fluky than it is anything sort of concrete. The Carolina Panthers almost came back and beat the Arizona Cardinals, but not quite. Chuba Hubbard was fine. I mean, thank God he ended up scoring that touchdown. Teteroa McMillan just looking like a boss. 10 targets, 100 yards. Cool. I think that's, that's Carolina, I guess. Unless we think Jatavion Sanders is real. I guess that's kind of the interesting thing. Because, like, Hunter Renfrow seeing 9 targets, that was kind of fun. I'm not sure how interested I am in him. But, like, maybe Jatavion Sanders because he plays tight end? I don't know. Are you interested in that at all?
I think there's weeks when you could probably stream him, but no, I'm really not too interested in Jatavion Sanders. Chuba Hubbard and Tet McMillan is going to be basically where we're at with things, and we can move along here. The Panthers did put two of their interior offensive linemen on IR, which I think is going to be awful news here for the Panthers going forward. I'm worried, but like, it doesn't really change things because Chuba Hubbard and Tet McMillan are the only people I had interest in anyways. But I did just want to note too that the Panthers did just add two of their starting interior linemen IR, so that's going to be a bit of a concern here going forward for how they're going to protect Bryce Young.
Now, on the other side of the ball, the Arizona Cardinals, they were out there doing their thing. Trey McBride looking like a superstar. James Conner found the end zone. Pretty cool. But Marv Harrison Jr., what are we doing, Tyler? How are we feeling about this?
I think I'm all right with it. It'll work itself out. He's drafted into a spot where I'm like kind of, you know, it is what it is. I don't have any strong feelings with Marv. Trey McBride's the first read, and that's just basically comes down to the only note that I really had is that Trey Benson's role is expanded here, playing a little bit more two-minute third down stuff. It's still James Conner, but they certainly are starting to scale him back a little bit. So still starting Conner up, but Trey Benson immediately becomes a person that absolutely has to be rostered and is kind of like one of the main handcuffs that is out there and could actually be kind of flex worthy. But I mean, Marv, I'm not really sweating things too much, but did want to mention that it is still very much Trey McBride as the first read. And then anything left over, Marv's going to get a shot at.
You know, like you were saying too, folks, like keep your eye on how this backfield is unfolding. There could be some interesting value out of there, which is not really something we can say at all about the Chiefs backfield. Boom. How about that transition? Talk about a backfield that is an absolute nightmare. You know, I lamented about this on last week's show, especially as somebody who ended up with a fairly decent amount of inexpensive Isaiah Pacheco. That is just looking like it's an absolute waste. The leading rusher for the Kansas City Chiefs is Patrick Mahomes, which is honestly kind of cool. Shout out Konami Mahomes. I'm definitely here for those vibes. Vibe City for Patrick Mahomes. But like, dude, I'm basically begging for them to just give Rashard Smith some opportunities because we're clearly not getting anything from Pacheco or Hunt. The offense as a whole is kind of just frustrating, but like mostly just the backfield stuff.
Yeah, it's tough to trust any of the Chiefs running backs at this point in time. Not only have we seen a split with Hunt and Pacheco, that neither one of them are really doing anything with it, nor is either one of them getting enough work in the pass game to make it worth it. The only players, in my opinion, that are startable is obviously going to be Hollywood Brown. The volume has been there. Yeah, 5 for 30 kind of sucks, but we have seen high volume in the past. It was nice to see some of that volume sustain. And then just for the nature of the position, Travis Kelce will continue to be a low-end tight end one going forward. Don't love the way this offense is trending. Mahomes is really making it work. They definitely need Worthy back. It looks like he does have a shot this week, but I do have faith in this offense working itself out when these playmakers do make their way back. But, man, we're certainly not excited or starting any of these running backs, and I would love to see them at least try out Rashad Smith to see what they got because it is certainly not Kareem Hunt or Isaiah Pacheco right now.
On the other side of the ball, the Eagles did Eagles things. You know, they did some tush-push stuff that made people angry, you know, and you know, other than that, you know, like they just largely ran the ball. When you're, you know, just playing this style of football, it is what it is for the pass catchers. Not too much to take away, but at least A.J. Brown didn't put up a stinker. So, folks, if you were worried about that, you were rewarded with 5 for 27. Not the greatest stat line in the world, but considering he only caught one pass the week before, I think things are looking good.
Yeah, I'm not panicked here. We know what this offense is and how they're going to try to play, and they're going to want to run the football. There's not a lot of volume to be had, but there's better days ahead. I'm not necessarily panicked. I don't really have any notes here at all. This game and these players and how the ball is distributed is pretty much exactly how I expected it. There's, you know, DVS and AJ Brown, they're going to get the volume. A little disappointing, sure, but you start them obviously on a week-to-week basis. And then obviously Hurts and Saquon. No notes here. The Eagles played in this game and were able to pull it off like they always do.
There you go. So now we can round things out with our discussion of the Sunday night football game, which was not great if you're a supporter of the Minnesota Vikings. Not great if you are C.H. Herms vocally talking about how the Vikings are the best team in the NFC and that J.J. McCarthy is going to be this breakout quarterback because, dear Lord, he looked terrible. That was a really bad time. Like, I don't want to pick on the kid. Clearly, he's still very inexperienced. This is essentially his rookie year. It is what it is, but getting injured in that, you know, fourth quarter, I think they're calling it an ankle injury. I'm a little bit worried that it's going to be something that's going to keep him out for like a month or whatever. But, you know, if that does end up being the case, congratulations, folks. We are getting Carson Wentz again. We're finally going to get Carson Wentz coming in to support things for this offense. How does that make you feel for, you know, obviously Justin Jefferson in a couple weeks, not next week, but the week after, we're getting Jordan Addison back. But then also I want to ask you about how we feel about, you know, regardless of who's playing quarterback, TJ Hockenson, a really, really slow start to the year for him. I don't want to overreact too much, but like he's only caught four passes so far. Not great.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, JJ McCarthy really struggled, man. He wasn't getting I don't think he's very good. I've said this multiple times. I just don't think he's very good. Three turnovers, clearly not really ready to be running this type of offense, if I'm being honest. Sorry, guys. I'm ready to say that he's really not that great. I've seen enough. He had one good quarter in week one against, obviously, one of the worst defenses in the NFL. So here we go. I think, obviously, expectations cool with Wentz, but I'm not too concerned. I don't necessarily think calls a hot take, but what we've seen out of JJ McCarthy, I don't think Wentz is going to be that much worse. So, you know, Justin Jefferson's probably going to be okay. I'm not really that worried about Hawk. I'll probably still roll Hawk out with Wentz just because I will. And then the running back room has been tough, but it looks like Aaron Jones left with a hammy. So as long as he doesn't play in this game, we don't have to really worry about that split. But yes, we need to be worried about Hockenson. But like, for example, I'm much more worried about Mark Andrews than I am TJ Hockenson.
All right. So no need to smash the panic button. We'll see how this continues to go for Minnesota as the season unfolds. And on the other side of the ball, I mean, it was just Atlanta was so dominant. Like, of course, a lot of that work got fed to Bijan Robinson in a game where you're running out the clock, getting Tyler Algier 16 carries for 76 yards and a touchdown makes sense. I don't think that's something we're going to be able to expect from him every single week. And then, you know, the pass catchers, like if you're winning and you're dominating and you're running, you're not throwing. So what is there to take away from this?
No, I mean, Kyle Pitts is startable. Drake London's more than startable. I'll be interested to see what Mooney looks like, who sat week one. He definitely was out there in 86% snap share. I do think there's better days. Mooney is a guy that I would probably be looking for on waivers if I needed wide receiver help. We've seen him be a rock solid wide receiver too a lot of last year. Not a lot of ton of notes there. As you mentioned, they just ran the piss out of the ball because it worked. And we'll have to see how they look in better scripts for the passing. So, my opinion is I still like Mooney. I still like Pitts and I still like London, kind of where they're at and what they do. And that's all there is to it.
There you go, folks. That is all that we have time for in this episode of the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. Check in with us again next week. We will go over all the important stuff that you're going to need to know from week three. And as always, check out our excellent content coming out on the website. You and I both have weekly stuff, ftnfantasy.com. Find it. It's all there. And until next time, we will see you later. Adios. Think about it before we go, just to say goodbye. And stay in-